Good morning.
Good morning.
And happy Independence Day, everybody. This is the day that people all over this great nation of ours will be celebrating these principles of liberty and freedom. And we truly do live in a great country that affords us, like Barry said, a level of freedom and liberty that is truly unprecedented anywhere else on the planet. And having done quite a lot of travel to areas of this world of ours that experience greatly limited liberty and freedom, I know firsthand it's something we truly need to appreciate at a deep level. So the title of my talk today is Living in True Liberty. And I want to talk about liberty and freedom from a slightly different perspective than what we normally think about. So let's start with the good old dictionary and see what it has to say. Webster says that liberty is freedom from physical restraint, freedom from arbitrary or despotic control, the positive enjoyment of various social, political, economic rights and privileges, and not being subjected to the control or domination of another. So that's all the typical stuff that we would expect to find there. And we tend to focus on these externally bestowed aspects of liberty and freedom when we think of it, and even sometimes when we celebrate on the 4th of July. But listen to what's also right there alongside those things in the dictionary. The power to do as one pleases. The power of choice. The absence of constraint in choice or action. Not being determined by anything beyond one's own nature or being. Choosing or being capable of choosing for oneself. Freedom and liberty are all about the power to choose, the power of choice, the power to choose one's own actions. And that's pretty exciting. True liberty lies in knowing that we have that choice. And that has nothing to do with anything external to us going on out there in our environment. It's something every person has access to, no matter where they are on the planet at any time. Now, Viktor Frankl, who wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning, which if you haven't read it, you really should. It's an amazing story, amazing book. He was a Jewish man who survived 2.5 years in a series of Nazi concentration camps during World War II. 2.5 years. He said this: "Everything can be taken from a man or a woman but one thing, the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." So here's this man who lost his wife, his parents, every member of his immediate family to the death camps. He survived all that horror, lived to be 92 years old, which I didn't know. And he, of all people, tells us that there's a type of liberty and freedom that can never be taken away from us. So why do so many of us who aren't going through anything nearly as dire as what this man went through, feeling stuck at times, like there's something we can't get beyond or overcome, we can't quite get what we want out of life or get where we want to go? What's stopping us? Well, my belief is that we are in prisons of our own construction simply because we don't realize that we always have this power to choose. And we don't know how to consistently access that power and exercise that power in our lives. Did you know that elephants, giant creatures, can be tethered by nothing more than a simple rope and a little stick that's tapped in the ground? And they stay there. They don't go away. They don't wander away. They weigh 5 tons. There's no way that can hold them to the spot, right? But when they're babies, they're trained by being chained to big metal stakes that are driven deeply in the ground, that are truly inescapable for them. They can't break free from those bonds. And they struggle, and they try, and it hurts, and they get tired, and they finally stop. Now, they grow into these giant beasts who obviously have the power to walk right out of pretty much any place they are, but they don't realize they have the power and the choice to just walk away. We're just like these 5-ton elephants. And we stay tethered to things that do not have the actual power to control us. So what kinds of things tether us? Let's talk about a few of them. Because one of the main ways that we do this and keep ourselves from experiencing true liberty and freedom is by focusing our time and energy on things that we cannot control. We waste an incredible amount of our time wrestling things that we can't change and can't control. And it's a completely unproductive pursuit to do that. The first one of these things I want to talk about is a little thing called the past. Our past. I have some news for you. We cannot change the past. There is not a single person in this room who has ever been able to change a decision that they made or a action that they took 5 minutes ago, 5 days, 5 years, or 25 years ago. The past is truly something we can't alter. It's done. It's gone. It's over. Yet so many of us spend a lot of our energy replaying or reliving conversations, mistakes, choices, losses, missed opportunities, filled with pain, regret, remorse for what we did or didn't do or what was done to us. And sometimes we can also get really stuck on good things that have come before. A great relationship that comes to an end. A peak experience in life. How do you go on from that? Or a fantastic vacation that we're now re-entering everyday life from. So we can get stuck in good things just as easily as negative or challenging things. So when we spend time fixated on the past in some unhealthy way, it's literally like going up to a ticket booth at a movie theater, handing them $10 and saying, I want to pay for the movie you showed last week or last year. You know, we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't do that. But we do that with our thought energy, our thought power, and our vital life energy. So let's look at it this way. If I am my present moment, I'm living my life, and my future is before me, and my past is behind me, if I'm in any way fixated on my past, it's like I'm craned around here with my head looking over my shoulder. How fast can I move forward in this position? How safely can I move forward in this position? I'm going to smash into things and trip over things, and the very best I can do is stumble my way forward in my life. That's what it's like when we're fixated in some way on our past. So remember the story in Genesis of Lot's wife. Lot and his wife are being moved by God from one place to another, which represents moving from one state of consciousness to another. They're being asked to come out of something toxic and unhealthy and move into a new experience. And their warning is, don't look back longingly. Do not keep looking back. Move forward. And so what happens? We know the story. Lot's wife doesn't heed the warning. She looks back, and she's figured into this pillar of salt. Frozen, paralyzed, immobilized. And why? Because she couldn't let go of what came before to move forward. Now, I am not suggesting that we ignore our past or pretend we don't have a past. In fact, our past has a tremendous value for us. But I'm suggesting we cultivate a right relationship to our past. And that means our past is something we should remember, reflect on, properly process, there's a key there, learn lessons from, and then graciously, lovingly, and respectfully release it. So if you need to get some help with something in your past that you feel really keeps you stuck, I encourage you to do that. As a person trained in psychology, I don't believe in just pretending stuff didn't happen or thinking it'll just go away. If you feel you need that support, get it. Because there's a constructive processing, but then there's also wallowing. And far too many of us wallow when we think we're processing, and then we just keep telling the story and reliving the pain and re-traumatizing ourselves over and over again. And that isn't what moves us forward. But the opportunity is to use our past to propel us into the future. We want to move forward. Now, the next way that I think we keep ourselves in bondage is by using our time and our energy to think about and talk about and complain about, fret about, worry about, obsess about things in the present and in the future that we cannot change or control, that we ourselves do not have the power to change. So the first one of those now there's a long list. I could be here all day talking about things in this world that we ourselves cannot instantly control and change. But I'm going to talk about a couple. And the first one is other people's behavior. Oh my goodness, the things people do in this world. Have you ever asked yourself any of these questions? Why can't people just do their jobs? Why can't people just be responsible? Where's common courtesy? Why can't people just be decent to each other? What is wrong with him? Why did she do that to me? Yeah, maybe I'm the only one that does that. I was driving along the other day in my car, and I heard a country song by Billy Currington that kind of summed this up for me. And the refrain says, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. Just look around. And I'm including myself in that category. We all have our stuff, right? If we are going to wait to be at peace to be free, to be content, until everybody on this planet does things the way we personally think they should, we've got a long, long wait, my friends. It's never going to happen, and there's not a dang thing we can do about it. People aren't going to line up behind you or me and just march to our little drum beat just because we would like them to. We cannot change a bit about the way that other people in this world behave. The only person's behavior we can ever change is the person standing in our own shoes. And we can change how we react to other people's behavior. So when I'm working on a talk like this or preparing a topic in some way, the gracious and loving spirit of this universe always gives me so many chances to practice what I'm going to be preaching. This last couple weeks has been a true adventure, including many people's behavior and a flat tire and a whole lot of other things. But I'm just going to pick one story to tell you that illustrates this about other people's behavior. So I've been doing some consulting as a software designer for a company in the Middle East. And I go there for 4 to 6 weeks at a time and work, and then I come back and I do the rest of the work here. It's a Palestinian company that I'm working for. So they are in a little Arab town called Ramallah that is in the occupied West Bank, not far from Jerusalem. And some of you have heard me speak here before about a little thing called the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So doing business in the occupied territories is a little challenging. Certainly not a lot of liberty and freedom happening there. Getting things done can be very difficult. So one of the differences, it's a very different world there, and one of the differences is in the Arab areas, they don't have zip codes. They just don't have them. Some don't even have street addresses in the different towns and villages. So mail moves a little differently than it does here. And I was coming up on a big deadline. I'd written a 350-page technical specification for these folks, and I needed to get it to them quickly. So they told me that I could FedEx it. They get FedEx all the time. It's no problem. So we decided that was the way to go. So last week, I went into the FedEx office, my local FedEx office, and I was relieved there was nobody in there, so I knew it was going to take a little time. And I went up to the counter, and I explained to this woman what I was trying to do. There was only one clerk. And I told her I was going to need a little help because I'd never done this before. Well, for some reason, this lady had an attitude about me or what I was trying to do from the moment that I opened my mouth. And I truly have no idea why. I was being very polite then. So I explained to her what I'm trying to do. They get FedEx packages all the time. I knew the zip code thing was going to hook her up because that's probably how they looked it up in the computer. And I said, they do not have zip codes. They get FedEx from the U.S. all the time. I told her that 3 times, at least, during our little initial dealings. She picked up her shipping destinations book, and she opened it. And for all of about 30 seconds, she sort of half looked at it and flipped around looking for Ramallah. And I explained to her it wouldn't be under Israel. She'd have to look under Palestinian territories or something. She didn't even look. She just flipped through it. She's like, it's not in here. Throws it down. Now other customers are starting to come in, and she's getting a little stressed because there's a line. She's the only one there. And she finally just looks at me. She's like, look, you don't have a zip code. I can't mail your package. It's as simple as that. You can't FedEx something without a zip code. Now, actually, I was still pretty calm, believe it or not, at this moment. And I thought, you know, maybe I misunderstood something about their business, or, you know, maybe they do have a zip code. So I said, well, I'll go outside and make a phone call, check this out while you help some other people. So I did that. Took me a while. It was late at night where I was calling. I had to track down my client and place this call. And guess what I found out? They don't have zip codes. They don't use zip codes. They get FedExes all the time at their office. They don't have a zip code. The only piece of new information I got was that sometimes the packages show up with 50 as the zip code. I go back in. I have to wait for her to finish with the person she's helping, and then everyone's giving me dirty looks in line because they know I'm going back up there. So I go up there, I tell her for the 4th time, there is no zip code, Ramallah doesn't have one, and then I passed on what my client said about the 50. She just very casually looks at me and with this smug look on her face says, yeah, that's what we do when there's no zip code. Okay, now, you know, the blood pressure's actually starting to go up a little bit because this was 30 minutes. I'd been here trying to deal with her for 30 minutes on this at this point. And now we're back to where we should have started. And she picks up her book and finds Ramallah. And it went on from there, but we go forward, right? So my blood pressure's going up a little bit, and I'm thinking about my lesson that I'm preparing. And I remember something that Viktor Frankl said. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. Between the rude FedEx lady and whatever I'm going to do, there's a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. This is what Viktor Frankl said. So remember, I'm going to leave my story for a second. Remember the movie Fried Green Tomatoes? It's a great movie. And we follow this story of Evelyn Couch, this genteel Southern lady who's been raised to believe that it's just totally wrong to express any kind of anger or outward upset. So Evelyn goes to the grocery store one day, and she's trying to find a parking place. And some of you have seen this movie. And she's waiting and can't find one. And finally, this old man comes out, and he's going to get into a car. So she's like, great, finally. So she backs up slowly, puts her turn indicator on. She's in her giant sedan. And the guy pulls his car out in front of her. And as he does that, from the opposite direction, in zips this cute little red VW bug convertible. Beep, beep. And they zoom into her parking place. And she's just sitting there in disbelief, and these two hot kind of chicks get out all dressed up and young, and they go walking by her car, and she says, excuse me, I was waiting for that spot. And one of the girls says, tough, face it, lady, we're younger and faster than you. And they throw their arms around each other and go off in the store. And Evelyn's just like stunned. Stimulus, and here comes the response. So Evelyn's, you can see the wheels grinding, and all of a sudden she just throws the car into drive, slams on the accelerator, and rams her giant sedan into the back of this VW bug. And she squeals with delight, she puts it in reverse, she backs up and does it again, and again, and again. She does it 6 times. She flattens the back of this VW bug. And the girls come out of the store and they're screaming, what are you doing? Are you crazy? And she just very calmly looks at them and she says, face it, girls, I'm older and I have more insurance. Drives away. Now, part of us really likes that scene and finds it very funny. And I think we need to have a little chat with that part of ourselves that likes that story so much. But what I'll tell you is that day at the FedEx office, part of me wanted to repeatedly ram my car into the back end of this lady's car. Because she was just so out of line from the moment we started until the very end. Her behavior was simply uncalled for and really unprofessional. It took me 45 minutes to mail a notebook. 45 minutes. And I was spending $150 to do this. And all I got from her from moment one was rudeness, attitude, and unprofessional conduct. So the temptation to pull an Evelyn Couch was pretty strong in some of those moments, I have to say. And I'm not going to lie and tell you that I handled this perfectly. I slipped into snarkiness on a couple of occasions with her when she was trying to make me fill out a commercial waybill for this book full of paper and all kinds of things. So, but ultimately, she gave me opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, at least 12, to choose my responses. And I was, for the most part, more interested in my own growth and freedom. And those things didn't have anything to do with what was coming at me from her. They only resided in what I chose to do back to her. So other people's behavior. And a very closely related one for us that we spend an awful lot of time on is worrying about other people's opinions of us. What if they don't like me? What are they going to think if I do that? What are they going to think if I don't do that? Will they disapprove? What if they think I'm wrong? Now, being attached to what other people think about you or whether they like you, have a favorable opinion, is really a recipe for an unhappy and stressful life. And I know because I've spent the better part of my life in some sort of people-pleasing, approval-seeking kind of frenzy. So what other people think of you is totally up to them. And it really doesn't have a whole lot to do with your own behavior sometimes. People will pretty much believe about you what they're going to believe about you, whether you like it or not. So I got another story for you. This one happened last year. I was down in Palm Springs visiting a friend, and they have this really cool tram that goes up into the mountains just outside the city. So it could be 100 degrees in the city of Palm Springs, and when you go up on the tram, it's 30 to 40 degrees cooler. So you can hike and do all kinds of stuff outdoors, and it's still beautiful. It's really neat. So my friend and I, she and I were going to go up and take a hike. So we take the tram. The tram cars are fairly large. They hold about 80 people. And I have to tell you a little bit about how these tram cars work. It's a rotating tram. So the outer wall of the tram doesn't move. It's connected directly to the pole that's connected to the cable. But the whole floor rotates very slowly counterclockwise so that you can be standing there and you're looking up the mountain. And by the time you get up there, you've gone around and get a 360-degree view of the mountains and the surrounding valleys and stuff. It's very cool. But they tell you there's a bar on the part of the tram that doesn't move. And they say you can't grip this bar because your body's going to move away from your hands. So if you're going to hold the bar, you have to keep moving your hands. So we get on the tram. My friend is to my left. I've got a family with two little kids to my right, and I have this big backpack because we're going hiking. So I kind of spread my feet so that I can tuck the backpack in so that people won't trip on it getting on or off the tram. We're right in front of the window. We got great places. And up we go. And my friend and I are chatting away. But before too long, I realize that she's not beside me anymore. She's behind me talking to me over my shoulder. And I'm thinking, that's really weird. Why'd she do that? Maybe she wanted to give somebody a window seat, technically. You know, I don't know. Well, then I found out. The woman who was now next to me was tremendously confused about the way the tram operated. And she was gripping that bar. And so as it would, her feet would come out from under her, she was moving her feet to right herself. And God knows how many people she pushed out of the way before she pushed my friend out of the way. Then she got to me. And I've got my backpack there, so I'm not moving. Because I got this giant backpack, and it's heavy, and there's little kids here. I didn't want them to get smashed. So this is kind of what it looked like. She's next to me here. Well, I'll be her, so I'm there. And she's doing this, and her body's moving, and my body's coming towards her, and I'm not moving. And she's doing this, and she leans towards the window, and she's, like, laying across my chest. And then she'd go, well, I never, and she'd right herself, you know. I'm standing there. That's all I'm doing. And she's like, she's coming over again. And I'm just kind of, you know, I would kind of lean back, and she'd be like right here, and she's looking out the window, and then she'd say, oh, my God. And she'd let go. All the way up the mountain, she did this, you know, sigh. And then her friends would say, what's wrong? And she's like, I'll tell you later. And here's the key part of the story. She thought I was doing something wrong. She thought I was doing something to her. She really thought this was my fault and that I was being rude to her. Now, I was a little amused, although I don't enjoy being wrongly accused. I don't like for people to think I'm a jerk. You know, I just was kind of amused because she was really upset with me. And when we got off the tram, she didn't realize that my friend and I were walking right behind her and her party. Yeah. And she proceeded to tell them all about this horrible woman on the tram who was pushing her and shoving her and just being the rudest person she'd ever encountered. She couldn't believe anybody could be that mean. Talking about me. And soon they were all agreeing about what a jerk I was. You know, sweet little old me. I was just standing there. So, you know, as I heard this, my heart's pounding a little bit, and there was a big part of me that wanted to defend myself, right? No, you weren't understanding how the tram was working, you know, and you know, I was just standing there. It wasn't my fault. I didn't like that they didn't like me, and they thought that I was a jerk. Really like being perceived that way. There would have been a time in my life where that literally would have bugged me for a really long time. And I would have never said anything to her, except in my head, about 1,000 times. There would have been a lot of conversations setting her straight. But what a complete waste of energy. As it ended up, I was able to laugh with this about this with my friend, and we were able to, there were a lot of lessons in that encounter, actually. And we were able to kind of harvest those and move on with our day. You know, what did this woman's opinion have to do with me? Or even my behavior. I was standing still. I wasn't even moving. It had absolutely nothing to do with me. We do not want to be driven in life by trying to get everybody to like us and approve of what we're doing. Alan Cohen said this one time, if you focus too much on jockeying yourself into everyone else's jigsaw puzzles, you won't even know the shape of your own piece. And that is bondage, my friends. We are here right now. We can walk out of that prison. So let's talk about a few ways that we can liberate ourselves from these self-imposed prison sentences. So let's go back to Viktor Frankl. He said, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. And that is the only thing that we actually have direct power to permanently and sustainably change is our thinking, our minds, and our behavior. And that's it. Everything else flows from that. First within, then without, is the universal order of things. So to live in true liberty, we have to stop letting things we can't control take control of us. And we went through, you know, a couple of things today, but one of my personal favorites is traffic. Oh my gosh, living in Seattle, oh wow, yeah. Anybody that talks to me on the phone while I'm using my headset and driving knows that that's a personal challenge for me. But traffic, the weather, the economy, the list is just so long. The aging process. We struggle and fight with so many things we can't control. When dealing with something, either in the past, present, or future, that we can't control, here's the things we can control. Our interpretation of it, our reaction to it, and just how much time and energy we're going to give to it. That's it. But that's a lot. If we just focus on those things, we don't have time to worry about anything else. So here's an exercise for you. Watch your inner self talk, what's going on in your head, and what comes out of your mouth when you're talking to other people, and see if you can't catch yourself complaining now and then about something that you cannot yourself change. You're catching yourself in a complete waste of your time and energy. It is literally like sitting in your car with the engine running, putting it in neutral, and revving your engine over and over again. You're wasting gas, you're wasting time, and you're going nowhere. That's what it's like when we ruminate, complain, and just grumble about things. If we really get a handle on this, I have to tell you, it is amazing how much time we free up for constructive pursuits. Just try to go a day without complaining and see how much time you have on your hands. It's been very enlightening for me. It really has. So if you find yourself ruminating and complaining about something you can't change, stop it immediately. Use it as a cue to redirect yourself. Get into a now moment and come into a process of discernment. Ask yourself, can I do anything at all to change this or to address this? Is there anything I can do that might change this or address it? And if the answer is yes, then take an action right now. Small, large, doesn't matter. Just do something to address what it is that's on your mind. But if the answer is no, there's really nothing I can do about this, I can't fix the economy myself right now, then shift gears and get your mind onto something that you can do something about. Take an action that you do need to take in some other area of your life. Do the dishes. Take a walk. You know, get some exercise. Make a phone call. Meditate. Or better yet, you can even do some work to elevate your thinking. Do some positive self-talk. There is nothing more powerful than doing affirmations or positive self-talk to condition your mind and shift your perspective onto something higher, move your thinking higher. And if you need some ideas on how to do that, stop by and talk to me afterwards, because I've put together a whole line of CD products that are affirmation programs, basically, on a variety of life challenges and topics that can really help you shift your thinking to a higher level. And we can never give our minds enough positive material. We simply can't. There's nothing more powerful than that process. So in that moment, you redirect and you do something constructive that somehow moves you forward. And in doing so, you walk away from that little piddly stick that you're tethered to that doesn't actually have the power to hold you there. So I'm going to close with a little story. One day, a farmer's donkey fell down into an old dry well. And the animal starts crying and crying because it's stuck at the bottom of this well, and the farmer doesn't know what he's going to do to get this donkey out. So after he thinks about it for a while, he realizes, you know, this donkey's old, not that useful. The well's dry, it's dangerous, I should have closed it in. So he invites his neighbors, they all bring shovels, and they're going to bury this poor little donkey alive and just close up the well. So they start shoveling in the dirt. And the donkey really freaks out now because its dirt is hitting him, and he's crying and squealing and screaming, whatever donkeys do. And all of a sudden, the donkey gets very quiet, and the farmer's kind of amazed because he looks down, and what the donkey's doing is that every time a shovel full of dirt hits the donkey, he shakes it off, and then he steps on it. And he shakes it off, and he steps up on it, over and over and over again. And eventually, he just steps over the edge and runs away. He's free. He liberated himself. So each shovel full of dirt that was thrown on the donkey actually became a tool that he used in his eventual liberation. Without the dirt, he couldn't have become free. And it was how he viewed the dirt and how he used the dirt that actually got him out of his jail there. So each time we catch ourselves in some sort of self-defeating, useless waste of time, we can do what that donkey did. And we can just shake it off, shift our focus, take an action like he did to stomp down the dirt, and come up a little higher. The donkey didn't just deal with one shovel full of dirt, remember? It happened over and over and over and over. So we don't just decide that we're going to change this way of being about ourselves and stop complaining and then just stop. It's going to take some practice. We're going to have to do it over and over and over. But when we consistently shift our focus from things we can't control or do anything about that waste our time and energy, and we put it on something we can do and take some sort of action, we eventually walk out of any prison that we've got ourselves in. That is what it means to live in true liberty. And we have that power to choose that right now. So happy Independence Day. Claim your liberty. And that's the way it really is. Thank you. you. Great to be here.